Neil Strausser with the CBS World News Roundup. It's all very vague, but the United Nations Security Council vote expected last night on sanctions against Iran has now been postponed until at least this evening because of verbal hints that Iran may be softening its stance on release of the American hostages, who today are entering their 11th week of captivity. Richard C. Hodlett has the United Nations story.
U.S. officials insist that when the council convenes, it will either have before it a specific official Iranian proposal on the release of the hostages, or it will vote on the American demand that economic sanctions be applied against Iran until the hostages are free. Secretary General Kurt Waldheim started trying late last night to find out whether anything has changed in Iran that would be worth following up. The council was scheduled to meet on the American demand yesterday afternoon, but then hints and suggestions came to some council members, reportedly from Iran's UN ambassador, Mansour Farhang, that the hostages might be released as part of a package deal involving a trip to Tehran by non-aligned diplomats and a committee of inquiry into Iran's grievances against the Shah. But there was nothing in writing and no assurances of any kind. That was too vague for the U.S., but a number of council members think a sanctions vote is unwise, that it would not help the hostages, but only make the Russians look good in Tehran by vetoing sanctions. They ask that these new hints be explored, and that is what is happening now with the U.S. deadline, 6 p.m. Richard C. Hottle at CBS News, United Nations.
In Iran, Ayatollah Khomeini's Revolutionary Council has taken stern action against the opposition party of Ayatollah Shariat Madari in the northwestern city of Tabriz. The opposition party headquarters was raided early today, and within hours, 11 party members were executed on charges of creating disorders. The reaction in Tabriz has been violent disorder, and Liz Trotta was on the scene.
Downtown Tabriz in the province of Azerbaijan, as thousands of young people, supporters of Ayatollah Shariat Madari, the rival to Ayatollah Khomeini, have fanned through the city, breaking window after window after window, banks, shops, all through the bazaar, anything that is a semblance or a symbol of the Khomeini regime. At the moment, they are in the bank Mali, on one of the main streets of Tabriz. There are people in there scurrying around, trapped by the crowd. Windows are being broken. The front door has been broken open with a pole, and God only knows what's happening inside the building. At the moment, nobody has been able to come out.
Correspondent Trotter reports that that bank was eventually sacked and burned. Representatives of the world's major grain exporting nations are meeting at the State Department in Washington this morning to discuss the U.S. embargo of grain shipments to the Soviet Union. The U.S. is seeking assurances that other nations will not make up for the shortfalls caused by the U.S. embargo, which was imposed after the Soviet invasion of Afghanistan. Most of the countries have announced their support of the U.S., the major exception so far, Argentina, which seems to be holding out for U.S. political concessions. Canada's Prime Minister Joe Clark has again assured Washington of his support and has also questioned the appropriateness of holding the Summer Olympics in Moscow. Clark has an alternate site in mind, but as Graham Greene of News Radio Ottawa reports, it's uncertain whether he can deliver it.
Canada last hosted the Olympic Games in 1976, building massive new facilities in Montreal. Prime Minister Clark says if the International Olympic Committee were to seek another site for this summer's Games, Canada could offer the existing Montreal facilities.
Given the special circumstances of Canada as one of the nations that could host the Games, to look very seriously at the possibility of putting our site in shape if there were a demand from the International Olympic Committee.
An official with the Quebec government department responsible for managing the Olympic site, however, says there would be many logistical problems to settle before the Games could be held again in Montreal. For one thing, the stadium is used by the Montreal Expos Baseball Club during the summer. All other facilities used in 1976 have also been booked for the summer months. Clark says he's spoken with Montreal Mayor Jean Drapeau about the possible move, but Drapeau isn't making any comment at the moment. Graham Green for CBS News, Ottawa.
Defense Secretary Harold Brown, continuing his Chinese tour, today visited a Chinese naval base in Shanghai and declared that the U.S. has the most powerful navy on Earth, and he said, we intend that that continue to be the case through the 1980s, the 1990s, and as far ahead as we can see. A Chinese admiral replying to Brown called the Soviet Union a threat to the seas and said, we must deal earnestly with the situation. Another step today on Rhodesia's road to independence and majority rule. Robin Wright reports from Salisbury.
The Rhodesian border with Mozambique reopens this morning, officially marking the end of conflict and tension between the two countries. Just a month ago, Rhodesia and Mozambique were at war. But since the signing of the Rhodesian peace treaty in London last month, the two countries have begun encouraging trade, dialogue, and eventually tourism. The new atmosphere is reflected in the fact that Rhodesian technicians are now going into Mozambique to repair bridges, railway lines, and communication facilities that were destroyed during a raid by the Rhodesian military just a few weeks ago. Meanwhile, a British military spokesman has announced that almost 21,000 Patriotic Front guerrillas have turned themselves in to Commonwealth troops, joining the ceasefire plan to end Rhodesia's seven-year war. However, there is still no full assessment of what percentage are genuine guerrillas. The Rhodesian military claims large numbers are children and women. The British are also concerned about the tension in the country as a result of the guerrillas who have not come in. The first clash of the ceasefire took place Thursday between the Patriotic Front and Rhodesian troops. Seven guerrillas were killed when they refused to put down their arms. The British fear is that further clashes will mar the delicate campaign period that culminates with the first recognized majority rule election late next month. Robin Wright, CBS News, Salisbury.
In Hong Kong, the only major money market open on Saturday, as gold shot to a record $674.54 today before slipping back to about $655 an ounce at the close of trading. In San Salvador, El Salvador's military command has pulled its troops back from around the Panamanian embassy, which was seized yesterday by left-wing militants. The militants are holding the ambassadors of Panama and Costa Rica and demanding the release of other militants jailed by the government. It came past midnight in the Illinois legislature, but financing now seems assured for Chicago's bankrupt school system. Steve Crocker of CBS station WBBM has the story from Springfield.
The Illinois General Assembly approved a complicated legislative package early Saturday morning to create a five-member financial control authority that will provide more than $700 million in long-term financing for the Chicago School Board. The school rescue plan, which now goes to Illinois Governor Jim Thompson for his approval, is designed to prevent the financial collapse of the nation's third-largest public school system. Governor Thompson called it one of the proudest days in the history of Illinois.
The General Assembly reacted with unprecedented speed to meet one of the gravest crises in the history of this state, the possible disenfranchisement from their education of 500,000 schoolchildren.
The next step is for the Chicago School Board to slash more than $160 million from its current $1.4 billion school budget. School Board President Catherine Roeder says the budget cuts are necessary to prevent a major tax increase for Chicago homeowners. Steve Crocker for CBS News, Springfield, Illinois.
Perhaps indicative of the changing fortunes in the Democratic presidential campaign, Senator Edward Kennedy now is saying that unless President Carter receives at least 50% of the vote in the Iowa precinct caucuses, it would be a major setback for Mr. Carter. Susan Spencer has more on the Kennedy campaign from Davenport, Iowa.
Today, Kennedy winds up a grueling six-day, 6,000-mile trek through Iowa, his last big campaign swing before the January 21st Iowa caucuses. The worst news to greet him came in a Des Moines Register poll yesterday, which showed him running 25 points behind President Carter. His response, the standard one, that he believes that though the national attention is focused now on the president, on the situations in Afghanistan and Iran, once those crises are over, the tide will turn. He will speak tonight at a county Democratic fundraiser in Waterloo. Also on the podium, Vice President Walter Mondale and Governor Jerry Brown. Delicate negotiations are still underway as to who will speak when. Asked if Kennedy and his old friend Mondale would even be at the dinner at the same time, a Kennedy spokesman simply said, "I don't think it's very likely." Susan Spencer, CBS News, Davenport, Iowa.
Kennedy's press secretary, Tom Southwick, meanwhile, says he finds it exceedingly curious that Mr. Carter was able to find time to appear on NBC's Meet the Press on January 20th, the day before the Iowa caucuses. Plans for the appearance on Meet the Press were announced yesterday by NBC.